This Morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Support for This Morning, America's First News comes from Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people, including runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4 and 33% on their life insurance. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/Gordon.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
The new Trump budget. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka on this Tuesday, February 13. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The White House has taken the wraps off a $4.4 trillion spending plan. Hear the Trump wish list and find out why deficit hawks are unhappy.
The Senate has begun rare and open immigration debate, but there's no agreement in sight.
The number of online schools continues to grow. How do their performance results match up against traditional schools?
And the debate over which of our expenses is the most wasteful, like dining out, or getting hit with bank and credit card fees.
People said, you know, paying interest and paying late fees, which a lot of people are doing. If you do have a credit card balance, yeah, you know, any sort of interest that you're paying on that is definitely, I guess you could consider that, definitely a waste.
Market Watch reporter Maria LaMagna on where we needlessly lose money each month. She's here in about 20 minutes. President Trump has introduced a $4.4 trillion budget proposal that would boost spending for the military, cut domestic programs, and projects deficits through the next decade. The centerpiece is a $200 billion infrastructure spending program, which Mr. Trump says would ultimately provide $1.5 trillion in investment, once matched with other private and public funds. Budget Director Mick Mulvaney said there are also changes to certain subsidies.
Proposed that for folks who are on food stamps, part of their benefits come in the actual sort of, and I don't want to steal somebody's copyright, but a blue apron type program where you actually receive the food instead of receive the cash.
His $716 billion request for defense, by the way, would represent a 7% increase over last year, largest buildup since the Reagan administration. It would add nearly 26,000 soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, build 10 new warships, and boost production of warplanes. Mr. Trump's latest budget assumes the economy, by the way, can grow at 3% annually over the next decade, far higher than Federal Reserve numbers. The Senate is underway with a rare freewheeling immigration debate, although it's not clear any proposal can pass. The session began yesterday with conservative Republicans voicing support for a package that includes President Trump's priorities, but has no Democratic support. Here's Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley.
Our proposal provides a compassionate solution to those who were illegally brought here as children through no fault of their own, and it includes a very generous opportunity for citizenship.
Democrats say they were considering putting forward the DREAM Act, which would offer a path to citizenship for young immigrants brought to the U.S. illegally as children, without any of the conservative enforcement priorities. The debate this week is expected to involve, at a minimum, the fate of so-called dreamers, border security, the legal rights of people apprehended, the ability of Americans to sponsor their family members for green cards, and the future of the diversity lottery. Make it 2 days in a row for roaring stocks. The Dow Industrials and the S&P 500 were higher right from the start yesterday as commodity prices stabilized, providing a respite for investors after two down weeks. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The Dow jumped 410 points yesterday, nearly erasing its losses for the year. U.S. crude oil rose to $59.29 a barrel, following its largest one-week percentage decline in more than 2 years. The Friday-Monday rebound meant the S&P 500 and Dow enjoyed their biggest two-day percentage gain since June 2016. And although markets rose, many investors and analysts warned that any recovery could be tested as early as tomorrow, when the government offers its latest look at inflation. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. Investors tell the Wall Street Journal they're encouraged by data suggesting global growth will continue to accelerate this year and by reports pointing to another strong quarter of corporate earnings growth in the U.S. One other note, by the way, a measure of expected swings in the U.S. stock market, the CBOE Volatility Index, headed lower again. 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. As part of a bipartisan spending deal, lawmakers last week voted to create a new congressional committee charged with trying to find a solution to years of spending dysfunction on Capitol Hill. Lawmakers are always hesitant when it comes to authorizing new committees, and they rarely do it. Could it be different this time? It's a story from Susan Ferriccio, congressional correspondent at the Washington Examiner. Susan, what do we have?
They've sort of been caught in a cycle of not being able to pass individual appropriations bills, which is how it's supposed to be done. There's 12 appropriations bills that fund the federal government, and Congress hasn't been able to do it separately. They've been fighting over how much to spend, how much to cut, and it's ended up in just sort of this big ball of spending at the end of the year that's done at the last minute. Or it's even gotten worse than that, where they've had to do these very short-term spending deals, some of them just a few days long, just because they're just so stuck on their disagreements. So they decided in concert with the rest of this bill that funds the government and sets spending caps for 2 years, that they would form this special committee to look at the spending sort of dysfunction that's going on in Congress. And it'll be bipartisan, meaning it'll include both parties. It'll also include lawmakers from the House and the Senate. And I think that that's part of the issue, to get the two chambers together and to talk about it and see if they can come up with a plan.
This is not the first committee to try this, right?
No, it's not. There have been super committees who've tried all kinds of things to do with spending. And what ends up happening is they may come up with recommendations, but they're not fully endorsed or accepted by the Congress. I'm really curious to see what's going to come out of this. These things tend to evolve. They've had committees try this over the year. It hasn't worked. But we're in a different era now where things have really gotten concentrated with these short-term spending bills. The dysfunction has gotten pretty bad. And so it makes me wonder whether that might provide some momentum for maybe getting something done. Not everybody has faith in it. A lot of Republicans kind of scoffed at it, said, oh, yeah, we've tried this before. This isn't going to work. But, you got to do something at this point. And at least they'll get down to talking and we'll hear some ideas. And I'm wondering if we'll hear, newish ideas about things. I talk to Republicans in the House, the more cynical ones. They say, well, the problem is the Senate. They need to get rid of that filibuster rule. That's not going to happen. So, there needs to be talk that's more realistic about what can change in the Senate to help move spending bills along. And you could argue not much, because it's just a differing of opinion over how to spend money. In this instance, it was a fight over immigration. It's very confusing to the public, because what does that have to do with spending? Nothing.
Right.
It's a must-pass bill, and so the minority party likes to use it to try to exert leverage for other things they want. And so it's used for a different purpose than just spending, and that maybe that will be part of the discussion. So that's going to start, and they have a report that's supposed to come out with their recommendations within a few months. And so we'll all be, paying close attention to see if they come up with anything that looks realistic.
We're speaking with Susan Ferriccio, congressional reporter at the Washington Examiner. Her piece is called, Can the Super Committee 2 Fix Congress's Dysfunction? The fighting that goes on, really, I mean, over a small piece of the pie, right? I mean, they really need to tackle something like Social Security and Medicare. You want to make progress, do that.
Well, that's an even harder one for them. And there are a lot of people who argue, yes, this domestic and military spending is one thing, but the big driver of our spending woes, of course, are the entitlements, which are Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, welfare, all those things. This year they'll take a crack at work requirements for welfare, for food benefits. It's really hard. That's kind of dipping the toe in. That's a tough one. Now, if they can get going on that, who knows? If they find success there, people may feel more emboldened to try to tackle Social Security or Medicaid or Medicare. Those are really tough ones. You've seen that ebb and flow over the years. They've never really been able to get in any kind of meaningful reform.
Thanks, Susan. Susan Ferriccio, congressional correspondent at the Washington Examiner. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
According to President Trump is sending Congress a $4.4 trillion spending plan that provides a huge increase in defense spending while cutting taxes by $1.5 trillion over the next decade. The result is soaring budget deficits. The new budget proposes $7.1 trillion in red ink over the next decade, basically doubling last year's forecast. Budget Director Mick Mulvaney says the plan seeks increases in such areas as building the border wall and fighting the opioid epidemic and high prescription drug costs.
You're going to see a major commitment by the administration in both additional spending and reforms to get drug prices down this year. The FDA is looking at a total increase of over $1 billion.
Trump last week signed a $300 billion measure to boost defense and domestic spending, negating many of the cuts in his new budget plan. The Senate's two top leaders put on a show of camaraderie as their chamber launched its immigration debate, but also laid down markers underscoring how hard it will be to reach a deal that can move through Congress. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says he supports an immigration proposal put forth by conservatives.
The Secure and Succeed Act is fair, addresses both sides' most pressing concerns, conforming to the conditions the president has put forward.
The conservative proposal would pave a path to citizenship for up to 1.8 million young Dreamer immigrants, but also calls for a border wall that Democrats and some Republicans don't want. This flu season is the worst since health officials started keeping records on infections in 2004, surpassing all metrics from the previous worst outbreak of 2014-15, as illnesses, hospitalizations, and deaths keep rising across the nation. The Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases says past outbreaks started to drop off at the beginning of January, but this year they're still going up. Tens of thousands of revelers are expected on New Orleans streets today for parades and rowdy fun as Mardi Gras caps the carnival season in a city with a celebration of its own, its 300th anniversary. The anniversary of the Louisiana port city will feature prominently in the Fat Tuesday festivities.
Is there alcohol allowed at those things?
No booze. Not a drop.
23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Savvy consumers love to share their personal money saving strategies, but what about their money wasting confessions? In other words, what money would you like to have back at the end of every month? MarketWatch personal finance writer Maria LaMagna has been taking the pulse of ordinary Americans. Maria, what are you hearing?
You know, different people are kind of weighing in on Reddit. One person asked, you know, what do you think is the biggest waste of money? I'm thinking dining out, but I've already cut that out. So he was kind of asking for advice. And then, you know, all different people on Reddit were kind of responding and saying, I think it's this, I think it's this, and offering him some different ideas.
Interesting. So dining out, what else made the list maybe according to most?
Yes. So a lot of people agreed with that and said, you're totally right. That is a big money pit for a lot of people. You know, when you can prepare food yourself at home for much cheaper, that is a common one. But another one I thought was interesting was that people said, you know, paying interest and paying late fees, which a lot of people are doing. If you do have a credit card balance, yeah, you know, any sort of interest that you're paying on that is definitely, I guess you could consider that definitely a waste. Or, you know, they were saying late fees. I would add overdraft fees into that, things like that, that, you know, you can hopefully control your spending and not fall into those traps, but those can add up really fast. And then other people offered some ideas that were a little bit more abstract, I guess. People were saying, you know, anything that you don't enjoy, yeah, you know, that can be a waste of money. Think about what really makes you happy and what you enjoy spending money on, and that can be more worth it than something that, you know, you don't like.
That's interesting. I was going to say, because you personally may assign a certain value to dining out that others do not, right? Therefore,
totally,
maybe it's more justified.
Yeah, I was just talking about that with one of my coworkers. You know, if that's something that brings you a lot of happiness, then I see no problem with, you know, budgeting that in.
Yeah. So some folks offered solutions, you said?
Yes, they did. I mean, the dining out one is one that's often, you know, thought of as an easy thing to cut out. But another sort of subtopic I thought was good was that people were saying, you know, sometimes it actually pays off to buy things that are of high quality. You know, sometimes you end up having to buy the same item over and over if you keep buying a low quality version of it. So that was something that I thought was kind of a good takeaway, that one person said the poor man pays twice, saying that if you're having to replace things all the time, that that's actually a worse way to spend your money. So it can sometimes pay off to save up and then buy something that's really high quality and keep it.
Good idea. We're speaking with MarketWatch personal finance reporter Maria LaMagna. She's written a piece about expenses that are the biggest waste of money. Some say dining out. Others say interest or fees when it comes to finances. Some said, too, buying stuff just because it's on sale.
Yes, I thought that was a really good one, too. It's especially hard now with so much targeted advertising. You might get emails or, ads online for something that you were thinking about buying and weren't, so convinced about. But when you see it's a sale, you're like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and pull the trigger. But if it's really not something that you need, it doesn't matter if it's on sale. You don't really need to buy it. So sometimes that can end up being something that's tricky.
Thanks, Maria. MarketWatch reporter Maria LaMagna. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday, February 13. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. White House releases a $4.4 trillion budget that adds to deficits. Two Baltimore detectives guilty of racketeering and robbery. Country singer Daryl Singletary has died at 46. Cause of death unknown. Negotiating a better severance if you're being let go. We'll have that story in about 15 minutes. 17-year-old Chloe Kim wins gold in women's halfpipe. And an example of foreign accent syndrome, where an Arizona woman got a bad headache, went to bed, woke up speaking like a Brit. That story in about 20 minutes. After years of steady growth, virtual schools are experiencing a blip as some states attempt to claw back public funds, citing student inactivity online or force schools to close due to habitual poor performance. At virtual schools, all classes are online and old-fashioned classrooms do not exist. More from Wall Street Journal education reporter Tonell Hobbs. Tonell, what have you found?
You know, each year, more students enroll in virtual schools. They're also called online schools and cyber schools. So last year, there were about 300,000 public school students enrolled full-time in virtual schools. And these are students that totally took all their classes online, totally removed from the brick-and-mortar school buildings. So what we found, we decided to take a look at their performance and found that about 80% of the students are in schools that have overall low performance. Their graduation rates hovered around 52%, which is lower than the national average of about 83%. Now, virtual school providers obviously give the defense, and they say that they are enrolling the most challenging students who are typically behind, okay, sometimes on the verge of dropping out, so that they don't feel that they should be rated the same as the traditional public schools.
Gotcha. All right, so back up one second then. Who typically attends? Is there a way to kind of characterize that student who does the virtual or online school thing?
You know, there is. I mean, I found families whose, there were children in the families who had been bullied. For some kids, the schedule just worked better. I found a triathlete who was just all over the place, and that schedule worked better. I found some students who liked the flexibility of the virtual schools because maybe they had some kind of learning disability and they needed to move at their own pace. Mm. A lot of them have reasons for wanting to do that.
The one mom, her reason jumped out at me because she said, "I'm just so busy." You know, I thought, well, wouldn't the kid be in school all day? I didn't understand that reasoning.
Well, yeah, she actually travels. So
oh,
she
that's
was
right.
in
that's what
different
she said. She
places.
Travels. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just easier. It just worked better for them with her being able to, you know, get him educated while she was on the road.
Boy, I would fail instantly if left to my own devices. Are you kidding me? In high school, to stay at home and do schoolwork by myself with nobody home? Forget
yeah,
it. That takes takes a ton of discipline, I'd imagine.
It really does. And I found that the virtual schools, because there are some that really work well, and I found that those that really worked well, they did a lot of screening on the front end. They made sure there was a good support system at home so that, you know, the student wasn't just sleep all day or playing games all day. And they looked at bad grades. They looked at past, you know, behavior. So the ones that did better actually did a lot of screening on the front end just to make sure it'd be a good fit.
Well, we're speaking with Wall Street Journal education writer Tonell Hobbs. She's written a piece entitled, As Online Schools Expand, So Do Questions About Their Performance. And the Wall Street Journal looked at about 400 of these things in a big survey. How do they typically work, by the way? If you're a student enrolled online or virtually, does that mean you are looking in at a particular classroom live at a school somewhere or not necessarily?
Yeah, a lot of them actually have live sessions where it might be, you know, just for an hour, a few hours a day. Now, the thing about it is, remember, virtual school is flexibility, so not all students can tune in during the live session. So a lot of these sessions are taped, so they can go back, the student can go back at their leisure and look at, you know, the taped sessions. And it could be a teacher sitting there, you know, just working through a math problem, and some of the classes are pretty interactive. You could have students tap a button, and that kind of is the raise the hand button. I got the answer. But it's all done online.
Wow. So that's not necessarily, say, checking in to a live session at your local high school.
No. No. You know, these are a lot of these virtual schools are run by charter schools.
Okay.
And it's totally separate. I mean, there are some school districts that actually have virtual schools. They tend to be a little smaller. And but these are separate. You're not checking into your brick and mortar school at all.
Thanks, Tonell. Wall Street Journal education reporter Tonell Hobbs. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, you often hear that you're not supposed to post your vacation plans on social media for fear that burglars might use that information to break into your home while you're away. Now, we might have to apply that advice to offering condolences online as well. This on the heels of police in Massachusetts arresting a man they say broke into people's homes while they attended wakes or funerals. Authorities say they began to suspect 35-year-old Randy Brunel during an investigation into a series of break-ins on Cape Cod. Brunel previously had served an 18-month prison sentence for breaking into a police officer's home as the officer attended his mother's funeral. Police say they followed Brunel's car Friday while other officers went to homes of residents attending funerals. And when officers discovered a break-in, they pulled Brunel over. They arrested him after finding jewelry in his pockets. Brunel, who police nicknamed the Obit Bandit, is facing multiple charges, including felony, breaking, and entering.
Hmm.
Now, they didn't actually say how he got this information, but I guess, you know, how else, unless you're kind of combing social media for this kind of thing?
Yeah.
You know, how else would you get this information that these certain people are at funerals during the day?
Newspapers.
I suppose, yeah, but again, knowing who's attending those funerals, that's the thing.
It does require some research, though.
Yeah, it does.
It's almost like he's maybe calling the funeral home and saying, hey, which wake is scheduled for 2:00 tomorrow afternoon?
Yeah.
Then looks the name up, perhaps, or matches it to an obit in the newspaper?
Yeah.
This does seem like a lot of
and
work.
You figure maybe he'd get away with a little more than just a little jewelry in his pockets. You know, if you're going to do that much research, you want your haul to be a little bit bigger.
That's,
you would think. I'm no criminal mastermind.
You're sure?
Yeah.
You're sure about that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Because you just dropped an important nugget there, I think, on what to do.
All right. Well, so did you about how to research people are attending funerals.
Touché.
The two of us together, you know, we could be dangerous.
Touché. That's about as low as it gets, though.
Taking
advantage of the mourning.
That, for sure.
The grieving.
And good news, Gordon, for residents of New Jersey's capital city who are sick of being woken up by crows. Starting today, the USDA will begin a coordinated campaign to scare away the nearly 30 30,000 noisy birds who have taken up residence in Trenton. The department is rolling out all manner of crow deterrents, including pyrotechnics, spotlights, amplified recordings of crow distress calls, and even crow effigies. USDA District Supervisor and biologist Kimberly Clapper told NJ.com that crows and other birds in the winter form large roosts, adding that the crows look for areas where there is less light and few people, such as parking lots. She says the methods have worked to clear crows from other urban areas, which is great. So the crows will be gone, but you're going to be woken up by all the, if you're in Trenton, be woken up by all the lights and the crow sounds and the pyrotechnics and the laser show. And everything else. So I'm not sure which is worse, to be honest with you.
July 4th at 5:30 a.m.
Yeah.
To scare away the crows.
Right, exactly.
What if they could use certain techniques like this to scare away the lawmakers in Trenton at the state capitol?
Oh, look at you.
How about that?
Spoken
huh?
like a spoken like an old Capitol reporter, right?
By the way, who knew that the USDA had a district supervisor?
Yeah,
would be in charge of such things.
Sure, there's a district supervisor, then there's like a district under-supervisor, and then the assistant to the under-supervisor. You know how it works.
Deputy supervisor.
There you go.
13 minutes now in front of the hour. Support for This Morning, America's First News with Gordon Deal, comes from Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people, including runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4 and 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/Gordon or mention the promo code Gordon when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Glad you're with us. Welcome into Tuesday. If you sense your company is going to terminate you, there are things you can do to prepare, including a strategy to see if you can improve your severance. Number one, talk to a lawyer. An employment attorney can help if you feel like you weren't fired for proper cause. Number two, negotiate yourself. Even if you do have an attorney, it's usually the best course to do the negotiating yourself. Having someone negotiate for you can escalate the tension. Number three, ask for more. You may be able to negotiate a lump sum payment, but don't expect, say, double or triple the offer from the company. Number four, nail down insurance. The COBRA law means you can likely continue your coverage for up to 18 months, but at your own expense. You may be able to get the company to keep paying for a certain time. Number five, ask about unused benefits. Some companies may offer a check in exchange for, say, unused vacation or personal time. And number six, be clear. Read all that fine print. Some severance agreements contain non-compete language, which limits your ability to go work for a competitive company. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, President Trump has unveiled a $4.4 trillion budget plan that envisions steep cuts to social safety nets but increases spending on the military, formally retreating from last year's promises to balance the federal budget. The president's spending outline for the first time acknowledges that the Republican tax overhaul passed last year would add billions to the deficit and not pay for itself, as Trump and his Republican allies asserted. But all presidents' budgets are essentially dead on arrival since Congress writes and enacts its own spending legislation. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says the end of major combat operations against Islamic State does not mean the U.S. and its allies have achieved an enduring defeat of the militant group. Speaking today in Kuwait, Tillerson said Washington has decided to provide an additional $200 million of aid to stabilize liberated areas in Syria. Tillerson added that ISIS remains a serious threat in the region. Two-time Major League Baseball All-Star pitcher Esteban Loaiza was arrested last week after San Diego County sheriffs allegedly caught him with $500,000 in cocaine. Loaiza, who pitched in the majors for 14 years, most prominently with the Chicago White Sox, was pulled over for a minor traffic violation while under surveillance for an ongoing narcotics investigation on February 9th. Authorities say a later search of Loaiza's home in Imperial Beach, California, turned up 44 pounds of cocaine. New satellite research shows that melting ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica are speeding up. The already fast pace of sea level rise At the current rate, the world's oceans on average will be at least 2 feet higher by the end of the century compared to today, according to researchers who published in the Proceedings of the National Academies of Sciences. Chloe Kim, a 17-year-old snowboarder from Southern California, today affirmed her place as the world's most dominant female halfpipe artist by winning gold in that event in a runaway. Kim scored a 93.75 out of a possible 100 on her very first run, and no one could match it.
Going into my third run and just knowing that I had won the gold medal was insane. And, you know, I went around, hugged everyone on my team and, you know, my coaches and everyone that's been there for me.
It was the third consecutive day in which an American won gold in snowboarding.
Very good. And she got her ice cream.
Yes.
She was the one who
she was hangry before this one, she said.
She like tweeted between events or something like that, right? I could go for some ice cream right now. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. An Arizona woman who has never left the U.S. went to bed one night and woke up speaking with a British accent. Michelle Myers was diagnosed with what's called foreign accent syndrome, or FAS.
They send in the psychiatrist at the hospital. You know, they make sure you're not a loon.
Over the past 7 years, she has spoken in various accents, first Irish, then Australian. Each time, the accent lasted about a week. But her British accent is still going strong since 2015. The New York Daily News says she went to sleep with a blinding and immobilizing headache and awakened a changed woman. FAS is a rare condition, one that's affected fewer than 100 people in the last century. It's usually linked to a stroke or neurological trauma or impairment. Other causes have been tied to multiple sclerosis. Ms. Myers also suffers from a condition known as Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which could be linked with her accents. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.